We've got a special guest this lunchtime. It's Carl Love. How are you doing, Mr. Love?
I'm doing really well, thank you very much.
Good.
Looking forward to a good sunny day and lots more meetings.
All right. Well, look, talking to that microphone for a start. All right. Just you're looking at the door and talking, and I'm thinking, I want to hear every word, and I want everybody else to hear everything that you've got to say.
Really?
So this is you've been elected. How many times have you been elected as a councillor?
So this is my second term for Isle of Wight Council, and it's my second term really for the East Cowes Town and Parish Council. I did a little brief stint just before that, but as I took over from somebody who'd sadly passed away, I took Maurice Barton's seat when he sadly passed away.
Crikey, I didn't know that.
So in his cows, so that's how I got elected.
He used to live down the road from me at Pan, years and years ago. And you know, I worked at the council for so many years. A lot of people got a lot of respect. So you had big shoes to step into then.
Yeah, it certainly was.
So you've been a councillor. This is your, say, you know, third term or second term?
Second term. Really.
And this is the one where you got a portfolio and so on. We'll find out more about that in a minute. But just tell us a bit about you, background of what you do, who you are.
Who I am.
Yeah. Who are you then?
Who am I? Well. Obviously, I'm not from the Isle of Wight, you know, I'm from Yorkshire originally, and I haven't tried to lose my accent. Some people I know do try to lose their accents, but I haven't. So I came to the island first in 1992, and I came here as a specialist detached youth worker working for George Weech and the youth service that existed then, sadly not in operation these days. And I was quite specialist in that I was doing HIV and AIDS prevention at that time, and fell in love with the island, very much so, and it was a great regret when I had to move off the island in 1998 to take a post up in Kent, which again was it was education and learning disabilities abilities, working in pupil referral units, and eventually became the drugs and alcohol education advisor for the whole of Kent, working in a team with the behaviour service. So my background is pretty much health and education. And when I was made redundant there, it was quite natural. We wouldn't have left the island in the first place if the job hadn't come to an end. So therefore, that's how I ended up back here. But yeah, I've been on, you know, me and my partner. My partner has been very loving and caring and been kind enough to follow me around. And here we are on the island. You know, we've been together for 32 years and so we're quite stable in what we do and just love living life here on the island.
And then someone said, "Ear, do you want this portfolio?"
Yes, they kind of did, really. Of course, we always hoped that the new independent alliance group would manage to form an alliance together, and we have done. We recognise that it's sensitive in that it's, you know, it's fairly even in terms of the Conservatives having 18 and us having 20, elected members. And so that makes whatever we do a bit of a challenge. But actually, I think that's quite good for the people of the island, knowing that it's balanced, knowing that people are going to really think through what their what decisions are going to be made, hopefully. And it's very, very early days yet. But, it's looking promising. I'm feeling confident. This is a job which, it's a vocation, really. I've spent my entire life doing sexual health work and drugs work and alcohol, working for people, community development in many different facets. And one of the things that the island really gave me was a lot of investment into my personal development in the early days when I was, you know, in my early 30s. And that allowed me to work with both health and education and community development of one sort or another. So I'm feeling confident. I think the alliance, you know, it will form, it will develop. You know, there'll be some ups and downs, but right now we're just trying to find our way forward.
Yeah, I think that's wise, because it is close. You say that you mentioned 18, 20, and so on. All it takes is for one person to sort of jump ship, and we've had people jump ship in the past. That's how easy it is. So hopefully, fingers crossed, that people won't do that. You can get a fair crack of the whip, and we can put something decent in place, which helps the Isle of Wight. I don't want to, because I like Richard Quigley. And, you know, he's been in. You stood against him as, the last general election.
Yep.
And I got a lot of time for Richard, but I was quite disappointed with him not joining one or the other. Were you disappointed or surprised?
No, I think it's the nature of the national parties, really, is that Richard is a good man. I've spoken to him face to face. We agree on a lot of things. We disagree on one or two things, but essentially we're there for the people of the island, and we care about the people of the island, and that's what we've got come through. So it's understandable that he wasn't able really to join in with the party. And same with the Liberals, they chose to just stand back slightly. But we are all communicating very positively one another. It's just that we're all masters to our organisations if we're a part of that. And that's my big problem with politics in the UK.
Personally, I don't think there should be politics at this level. I don't think the colours come into it. I think it's all a case of getting, working together and so on. I've said this, and I'm never going to shy away from this. You've got, I made the point last time we had a lady in from schools and education last week, Debbie Andre.
Oh, yeah.
And I say that we just should not have politics at this level. And the reason why I don't think it works, and I think, Richard Quigley has kind of highlighted this, and that is, you look at January the 4th, go back to January the 4th, and Boris was saying, come on, everybody, back to school, which meant that all those Conservatives locally had to say, come on, back to school, it's safe. And for the very same reason, I look at Richard and thinking, you don't want to form a group because you will be controlled by your own party and so on. And I'm just thinking, if you did away with that, you could then be a much better part of a team that wants to move forward rather than being controlled by somebody in London who ain't got a clue of what goes on the Isle of Wight.
Yeah, I think Richard is quite an independent thinker, and I'm quite impressed with some of the things that he's had to say, and I just think that you're absolutely right. That's why I'm not a member of a party. I don't particularly want to be a member of a party. I want to be able to make my own decisions. And
that's what we want. As an islander, that's what I want. Yeah. I don't want you to be governed by some idiot from London who thinks he knows better for us on the Isle of Wight. So that's kind of music to my ears, and I think that's where we should be.
And that's really great, except that unfortunately, central government does pull many of the cords, because we've got to work within, one, the directives that they send down, but particularly the money which they give us. So the politics are influenced sometimes by what money is given to us. I mean, the problem with the island, to be fair to the previous administration as well, is that the government has taken away roughly about £60 million from us. It's not money that we had, it's money which they gave us, and they've withdrawn that. And that's what happens in terms of, that's why the cuts have to be made each year to the budget or income generate. So the difficulty is that the budget which we're working to now as a group of independents and the Alliance is actually a Tory budget set at the beginning of the year. We have to work within that legally. We haven't got much room to manoeuvre. But we do know that we've got a £3 million cut coming next year from government and the year after. And it's how we manage that really matters. So there's very little room for us to manoeuvre. And one of the things that I've kind of learned quite recently is that, when people talk about, putting the community charge taxes up by, 1%, 1% on the Isle of Wight equates to something in the region of about 800,000, 850,000 per 1%. But if the government's taken, 3 million off you and you're only allowed to put adult social care up by 2% to compensate, we've still got, we're still 1.5 million short, aren't we, in terms of what we've lost? So then you're faced with, well, if you can't raise the money, what else can you do? And so we're going to have to be as creative as we can. So in a sense, we're no different from the previous administration. We are faced with cuts forced onto us from government, and the way that government changes really matters, because there's a lot of short-termism in their in the way that they allocate these grants. So, I know that I've got a grant of £5.5 million, which runs out next year. It runs out at the end of March. That's just for my particular team. Now, you know, the Section 151 officer who looks after all of the money for Isle of Wight Council, you know, we have to work quite closely with him. It feels reasonably confident that we will get some of that money renewed, but it's by no means a guarantee. And so what we have to do is we have to second guess what is going on with the government in terms of how they're allocating money. So really, that's why I need, and I shall be writing to Boris Johnson fairly soon, to say you promised in a, you know, you promised in your general election strategy that you would find a funding solution for adult social care right across the United Kingdom. We need that now, because ultimately, when it comes to next year's budget, unless he gives me that £5 million, and we have to go cap in hand, you know, like I'm saying now, practically begging for them to give us the money. In the meantime, we've got to try and guess what it is that they're going to do so that we can try and make sure that the services are still operating this time next year. Because £5.5 million after 10 years of austerity, It's just not doable. It's not recoverable. So that's kind of where we are, and those are some of the things which I'm having to struggle with now. So, you know, even if we get a white paper at the end of this year, it doesn't follow that the money will come with it for another 18 months. So we're trapped by the government spend. So, you know, the team that's working with me, I'm very lucky that we've got Carol. Excuse me, who's Dr. Tozer, Dr. Carol Tozer, who's the chief officer that works directly with me, who's very on the ball at trying to direct me, because without the officers behind me, it's a team behind me that direct me, and then we make the political decisions. So they're really running the council, we make the political decisions. So it's just trying to understand that at the moment.
Okay, two questions. One regarding Carol Tozer, we'll come to her in a minute. But first question is, because we're not a Tory island for the time being or for the next 4 years, does that mean you've got no one to open the door for, you know, to have a proper discussion with Boris? How does that work?
Well, we have somebody to open the door. That's called Bob Seeley. That's what his responsibility is. I've not yet met or spoken really with Bob Seeley, but I know that Councillor Laura Wilcox is engaged in some discussion with him.
Good.
But we have to work together, irrespective. It's about that political divide again that you mentioned at the beginning. We have to bridge that in order to benefit the people of the island. So, yes, I suspect that there's a bit of a sting in the tail up in Westminster, because they lost their constituency down here on the island to, you know, our administration. And, of course, the Isle of Wight has the largest number of Conservative members anywhere in England. So it was quite a big thing for them to lose. But we've got to rise above that, because we're not here for the politics, we're here for the people. Politics should be about the people and putting the people first. And so it's going to be a challenge. I'm not saying that it isn't. It's going to be a challenge, but we are unique as an island, obviously, because of the water that surrounds us. And we still need, you know, we still need that local government settlement. You know, we need that, and we need an island deal.
When will we know that, then? When you're saying that Laura's discussing things with Bob Seeley. Does there come a time when you think, hang on a minute, we've been in for X amount of months now, what's the answer? We've got to make plans. Yeah.
Well, I think the difficulty with that particular issue is that the Conservatives, the previous administration, couldn't answer that question either. They did get, and we did get him on television saying, promising Bob Seeley, you know, and an island deal, I'll be speaking to you, Bob. So we know that he's got that in the back of his mind to do that. But, you know, that was kind of pre-COVID. And everybody seems to be using COVID as an excuse now to alter or change their directives, or say, we're not doing this now because we need to rethink it. Well, you know, COVID has made us use technology in a really good, positive way, I think, in recent months. But also, what we don't want is for people to use it as an excuse to reshape their business because they wanted to, in order to be financially better off. We've got some real challenges coming. There's no doubt about it. Financially, we've got real challenges coming. But it's how we deal with it that matters.
Nobody should hide behind COVID. Somebody should say, hang on a minute, it's more urgent. It's not an excuse to hide behind anything. Going back to Carol Tozer, how much of a loss is that going to be? You said that how important she was, but we are going to lose her at some point in the future.
Yeah, Carol Tozer is leaving for one reason. She's now reached a certain age and she wants to retire, and she's not been particularly well. And life is about our own individual health and well-being, isn't it? You know, we look after our own health and well-being, and she's decided that she would want to retire and that this is the opportunity to do so. Replacing Carol is going to be difficult because she is very highly skilled, without any doubt. You know, some people love to hate her. That's their opinion. But the fact is that she is the knowledge of all font. I've only been in for, just not quite 2 months yet, is it? And she's been, incredibly important. But I do know that there are other workers within her team who can step up and step in and support. So I feel it's also an opportunity, isn't it, for a new beginning, new ideas, new thoughts. So we've got to look at it in two different ways, haven't we? We've got to look at it that way. And also, at this time, we, as an administration, I don't want people to think that I've got a magic wand. If anybody knows a shop that sells a magic wand, I could, because it ain't going to happen like that. I'm not going to promise things that I can't deliver. What I will do is listen. And we've already, and we will try to take people's opinions into account. That's the difference, is that we're not a closed shop in the way that the previous administration was. We are going to be out there listening. We're going to try to respond to what people want and need, rather than it just being cabinet decisions. We're moving away from a cabinet member being able to make a unilateral decision.
That being said, I mean, I've had discussions with Claire Mosdell in the last few years, and I know that she worked incredibly hard. Do you have a bit more respect for what she achieved in the last 4 years, having now been in the job for, a number of weeks? Because I know it's, I reckon with what you've said so far, you've probably got the toughest portfolio of all.
I think anybody who puts themselves up for election brings a certain amount of, I do it because as long as it's fun, I shall do it. And when I say fun, I mean that I'm enjoying doing the work that I'm doing. So she did a big job. We wouldn't always see eye to eye on some of the things that went through. But the fact is that she did work hard, as most local, members do. But the other thing to remember is that I also, unlike Claire, I'm not in a sleepy ward. I've got East Cows. If it's not the floating bridge, it's Red Funnel. If it's not Red Funnel, it's Venture Keys. If it's not Venture Keys, it's the council or some other things. We're a busy island gateway. So I'm having to juggle a lot of balls. And some people may have noticed already, I'm not quite communicating how I did on Facebook, because it's often, 11:30 at night before I actually put the pen down. And I do have a family, and I didn't really expect the amount of effort that I'm going to have to put in to keeping up with people.
So are you accepting the fact that she worked hard, and you're now finding out how hard she did work?
Yeah, of course she did.
So
yeah.
Do you think it's a two-man job? The role that you've got?
Well, that's why I've split the role. That one of the very first things that I did was I looked at the job, in terms of how it was functioning. So essentially I had three elements, which is public health, adult social care, and social housing, so as to say, the housing element of it. So what we've done is that, in actual fact, what people don't realise is that that's three different types of language in how people communicate, three different systems and responsibilities. And there is no way that this job should ever have been just down to one cabinet member. And so we split off the housing, and Councillor Ian Stevens has agreed to take that bit of responsibility in order to let me focus in on adult social care, because adult social care is absolutely critical. When you make a decision, it affects people's lives, and because the money is now so tight.
Can I chuck a curveball at you?
Yeah.
Now, I don't care what colour anybody is. I just want somebody to do the best job.
Yeah.
Okay. We had a chat off air and you told me, you know, on air as well, what your background is and so on. And I look at that and I think, we've got the right person for the job here. Now, because you passed something, and no disrespect to Ian Stevens whatsoever, I know that he's been in the council for a very, very long time. And again, I'll refer back to my comment about don't care about colour, just want to get the job done. Wouldn't it have been easier, better, maybe, if it's possible, to say, hey, look, Claire, you've been in the job for the last 4 years, assist me, help me, let's work as a team. Because she's got knowledge of the last 4 years, she knows what she's doing, she's been working with Dr. Carol Tozer all that time, working hard. You know, there will be people that will say, why can't you work together then?
Yeah.
Is that something that is we are not capable of doing, or is it something that legally you can't do?
No, it's nothing to do with the legalities. It's all about how people work together and having the same ideologies and so on. And the difference between, you know, because, you see, then we enter into the politics, don't we, which is the bit that you do.
I don't like politics. Yeah. This is why we can't get things done.
Yeah. But the trouble is that if you have a political master who you're towing the line to, which is what the Tories do, it's almost like a top-down, bottom-up approach, and we don't need to follow any of their directives whatsoever. But the difference is that traditionally, one party goes out and another party comes in, and I'm happy to work with people as far as I possibly can. And Claire's made a very clear statement that online that she's done with adults, so she's not even standing as the
shadow
cabinet.
Yeah.
So and I can see why, because I can already see how much of a drain it is actually on the individual. And I'm not bleeding. I'm not saying at this moment in time I'm coping with it quite happily. But I wanted to do something which was slightly different, which was to break that away. It still falls within my responsibility. It's just that Ian is helping out by specifically focusing on that. And I think that that's the right way to do it. That's how we want to be different. So, we are not yet in a position where we want to actually stand up and say we are going to do A, B, C and D, because we're still trying to formulate all of that. It's easy for me to say that we were, I can say, well, actually, we're going to put all the local area coordinators back. Let's put them all back. That's easy for me to say, but then I've got to find the money from it. And when that money is already stretched to the limit, so we've got to work out what the absolute priorities are for the people. What do the people want? And then what do we need to do to make sure that we don't lose anything from the bigger picture if we change and manoeuvre and things within the budget that we've got? And, there'll never be enough money. Let's face it, there'll never be enough money for all the things that we would like to do. But right now, we're just trying to focus on making sure that the frontline stuff stays there. And, so my big effort at the moment is to try to get some more investment and more money down from government into the Isle of Wight, and everybody's doing the same thing, but the government has moved from this long-term projection of money to short-termism. That's not good for anybody. So I don't want any short-term contracts. I want contracts that are three years minimum, so that people can see where they're going for the next 3 years.
So for the next month, 2 months, you're going to have to see and do and be doing a lot of stuff before you actually put things in place. So when can we expect to see, changes if necessary? When can you expect personally to put your own stamp on what's going on?
Yeah, I think that even that's really difficult to say, because the culture of health and education is very slow to change. So you're likely to see some possible changes about how things look in the future around about budget time, because the money, you can't put things in place without the money, and you can't change the money so easily internally. And of course, you tend to see things start to change as contracts come to an end, because then you can shape that contract and you can change it. But you can't do much in between, because you're bound legally by all of those things. So what I'm saying is that, if people are expecting me to do really radical things, that just isn't going to happen in the time.
I'm not expecting that at all. No. I look at common sense. I look at common sense. You've got 18 Conservatives, and you've got so it's split.
Yeah.
So it would be ridiculous to think, right, we're going to go in, I'm going to rip it all up, and we're going to change it, because there is still a large element of people wanting Conservatism on the island.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you've got to try and keep everybody sweet. But I'm not expecting you to come in and say, right, we're going to change everything, we're going to do all of this, and we're going to do it by next week.
And I'm really pleased to hear that, I can tell you, because that simply isn't good. No, what I think that I bring to it is that I really do know the language of health particularly. And that helps me when I'm reading documents and so on. To understand what that really means in implication, and because I was at the sharp end as well. So, I mean, we really want to try and keep as much of the front end of the delivery to our people up as possible. And that means when we look at cuts, we have to look at backroom cuts. And at the moment, I'm just trying to understand how all of that operation is. We have to be smarter with how we spend our money, but we don't have a lot of flexibility there. And my real problem is that I'm still faced next year with, as it stands now, you know, if we have to have a cut of £3 million next year. So that's likely to fall on my department because, as you've already said, you know, I've got the largest portfolio with the biggest amount of money that goes into it. And therefore, some people think it's easy to withdraw money, but every decision that I make now, because of the years of leanness that's happened before me, means that whenever I make a change, it has an impact directly to people. And what we want is to be working much more with the voluntary sector. And I think that you could say actually the Conservatives started that process. But that listening more to what the people want and trying to be smarter in terms of using technology, you know, there's been such a big change in terms of what's happened with the pandemic, in terms of communications and so on. I've got to look at some of the issues which are really facing us. Most of these things are actually outside my control, but dental health, for instance, on the island, everybody knows that you can't get an appointment for NHS dental. So my first questions there were, why can't people get appointments? That was my verse. Why can't people get appointments? And then, you know, thanks to Carol and her team telling me that, well, actually, it's because the government gives us so many units of NHS funding, and that goes to the GP. So each GP gets so many units of NHS, and they've been reducing that gradually over many years. So they won't take anybody new on because they don't have the units to support who they've currently got, never mind new people in the system. So somehow we've got to go to government and say, we need more units, you know, because that's why nobody's being taken on. And people say, well, how is it that I can get, if I offer to pay, I can get an appointment? Well, that's because they haven't got any units left to pay for your treatment. And so therefore they have got appointments, they just haven't got any money from government to pay for that appointment, and therefore that's what happens. So I'm starting to learn all of this stuff in really, you know. But you're right about the politics. That the thing which disappointed me most when I first got in is suddenly I've got access to all kinds of information that I never had access to before. You know, because, and that was purely because of the way that, you know, and I call it the Secret Service approach of the Tories, where everything's kept into a little group. Well, we're going to try, and it'll take us a bit of time to change that as we go along as a group, so that we're more inclusive, so that we do ask more questions and involve more people. But it doesn't happen overnight, because we've got to make sure that the officers feel secure with us. We need to feel secure with one another, and we need to know exactly what we're doing. And you know, I'm not a technical person in terms of, you know, well, I was technical when I worked in drugs and sexual health and all of that sort, and alcohol education and so on, because I needed to be technical within a specialist. I was one person doing that job in one area. Now I've got 50, 70, 80 areas, and I can't know all the information. So it's really important that I rely on the officers and try not to be something that I'm not.
Should we give Bob Seeley a bit of a nudge? Because it sounds like he's holding a bit of the key here. Because as soon as he makes contact with the right people and gets the nod for the amounts of cash and so on that's coming our way, then you can formulate a better plan. Is that right?
That's right. I mean, he's not always directly involved in that stream, but I think you're absolutely right. The point is that the earlier they identify what money they're going to give us, the sooner we can think about what we're doing, rather than trying to second guess. And that's the problem, is that you often get, you know, officers and people trying to second guess what might or might not happen. I'm planning because I have to plan, whether if I want to or not, that my department will take £1 million hit next year on top of what's happening this year. I have to start planning, and so does the team, for that, in the hope that that won't happen, because and that always leaves a bit of negative. You know, we're working on a negative aspect instead of a positive aspect, aren't we?
I've got to be honest. When John Metcalfe came in a number of years ago, about 2 or 3 years ago, and he was saying that every year we have cutbacks. We've had cutbacks since whenever, and you just I can't get my head around that, because I know he's not fibbing, but I just can't get my head around it, because. You just think things go up, things are more expensive. Surely you'd be getting more money, not less.
Well, as I said before, the problem is that if you've got, you know, the council, you know, I can't predict what we will do or not do with budgets next year. But if we're facing a £3 million cut from government as it stands now, without any uplift from any other sources, just to, you know, we haven't been maintaining our position. We've been dropping our position for 10 years financially, and that's because the government's taking the money to pay off national debt. Well, now on top of that, you know, the thing that kind of a bit like yourself that blew me away really is that suddenly we've got billions and billions of pounds pumped into the economy necessarily because of COVID, but we couldn't do it before, you know, and that kind of it's a bit of bittersweet pill.
So you did have the money, but you just weren't. There's a lot of things that hopefully at one point there'll be a mass investigation and we'll realise that, you know, we've been hoodwinked quite a lot. And maybe we'll have that investigation when all this is over, when COVID is over and we can all get back to some kind of normality. It ain't going to happen now, but hopefully it will. Yeah. Because I think as a nation, we've all been hoodwinked.
Yep.
We have. We've been taken for a ride. You say that we didn't have the money then, but now you all of a sudden you found the money.
Yeah.
So which is it to be? I mean, you've been holding the purse string since 2010 when you got elected and went into bed with Liberals. But I mean, what is really going on financially? Yeah. Well, there's a lot of people. Just so you know, working in the Riverside Centre has really opened my eyes to the fact that there are a lot of people out there that need help. There are a lot of people out there that need a lot of help. There was a gentleman that is that used to be on when you come in, he was on the desk front end, and he would tell you, you'd ask him where you need to go and so on, and he would guide you, he would answer the phone and so on, and he, I know that when I went in and saw him about 2 years ago, and they cut his funding, and this guy is wheelchair bound, and basically he had to stay in bed for X amount of hours because they cut something, and no one was going around and helping him, you know, putting him to bed or taking him to the loo and so on and so forth, and he just thought, this can't happen. This is Britain, and that was 2018, and we're taking away the help for this poor so-and-so. And he is just one of so many.
Yes.
And I look at that and think, and you're making cutbacks.
Yeah.
God help you, whoever it is that's making the cutbacks, that you ever are in that position.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that I've actually written already is to say, you know, the United Kingdom's economy, we're the fifth richest nation in the world, and our healthcare and particularly adult social care is vastly under-resourced, you know, and that means that we're asking, you know, we're lucky that we've got so many volunteers, you know, the fantastic volunteer organisations that are out there helping support. And without the, you know, there are lots of people who care for their relatives at home. If those carers were to stop caring, you know, we would completely crash as a nation. So we've relied on, you know, family members doing a lot, and that's fantastic, and it's really important. But there are a lot of people out there who don't have that family support, and that's where we need to make sure that we invest. And my job is to really try to protect those areas as much as possible. But you know, COVID is a classic example. COVID identified about 82 individuals who came in, you know, pre-COVID, were fine, had no social support or adult social care support at all, no home help. COVID's come along, now they, you know, we've identified 82 people who need additional help. The amount of money that the government has given us is 1.1 million. That ends in September. But what happens to those 82 people? You know, we have to find the money. So that means other areas have to be hit. And of course, nobody likes there to be any cuts in anything, and we don't want to cut anything. We just have to find different ways of working. Now, I'm pretty sure that the Conservatives have been working at that as well, to be fair to them, but we have to get smarter and we have to see more smarter technology, because the money just isn't there. And once COVID's over, of course, we're all slightly nervous about, you know, what savings we're going to have to make in the future. So we have to prioritise our most vulnerable and most needy on the island to get the services. And, you know, adult social care isn't free, despite what everybody says. Most people are means tested for adult social care services when they're receiving services and have to pay for it in one form or another. And without the councils right across the UK doing that, we wouldn't be able to provide hardly any of the services that we're doing. So it's a really big challenge, and that's why we need, the government have been saying for a long time that they will sort out, long before Boris, and to be fair, you know, even when the Labour Party was saying, we'll sort out how we fund adult social care. And the bottom line is, we're going to have to see some tax increase somewhere nationally, at a national level, to pay for adult social care if we're to be able to continue to support people as we currently do, let alone what we might have to do, you know, if the money doesn't come through.
Well, I was talking to my mum last week. She's 89 today, bless her.
Wow.
And
happy birthday.
and she was saying, she was having a moaning and groaning at the NHS, and I had to sort of jump in, because I got the utmost respect for the NHS. And she was saying that the last time she was up there, she had a magnifying glass, okay, because she's now registered blind.
Yep.
And they wanted it back, and they were going to try and get her another one, but they haven't, and she still, so she's got her mindset is, the NHS, they haven't helped me. I'm still waiting for a magnifying glass. So she's angry about that. And rightfully so, she can't see. She's got a friend. Okay, Doreen, I'm going to name and shame you. She's got four of them. But because she knows how to play the game.
Four magnifying glasses.
The sad thing is, she hasn't given my mum one of the magnifying glasses. This sounds like a silly story, but it's not. It's because we've got situations where people need the funding or need things, they can't have it because someone else has got it and they don't need it. Mm. And if we were to be a little bit more honest, all those people out there to say, hey, look, I don't really need this, but I want to put it back in the pot, it means other people can use it. And I think that mentality is all over, not just on the Isle of Wight, but it's all over. And I think if we were to target some people, hey, look, the NHS need their crutches back. For God's sake, take them back. And Doreen,
we can't use them. We can't use them.
How daft.
You know, we can't use them.
How daft. And Doreen, if you're listening, take one of those magnifying glasses back. There's someone else that needs it.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid that's not how it happens now. I mean, most of the equipment, you know, once it's been installed, is never reused. It's never reused because of hygiene and cleanliness and so on. Now, I know that sounds crazy, but a lot of that equipment isn't reused ever. This is one of the things that I've got about, you know, in housing, what we need to do is we need more social wraparound independent living units, you know, houses that have been or bungalows even, or flats that have all been adapted so that people can live independently. Because a lot of this is actually about accessibility for people. So if they live in premises which are adapted properly to their needs, then that has, it's all about cost. That has a less of a cost than it does in terms of putting people in residential care. And we've got too many people in residential care. So we want people to be able to live. You know, when I get really old, I don't want to go into retirement or an old people's home, as people call them. I want to go into... You know, I want to live in a place which has been adapted for me, where I've got hoists and things, but we don't have that accommodation. So certainly we've been talking about that as a new administration, in trying to, you know, we need to embed that into housing policy so that we get a certain amount of, you know, new accommodation. So we need social housing. But then, you know, in order to free up the housing chain market, we then need to have some housing which is affordable But also purchased, so that I could purchase. I can afford to purchase my own. You know, why should I eat up a social housing unit when I can afford to buy a premises in the future, which is adapted for me? That's the sort of thing that we need to do, and then that frees up those three bedroom homes. Independent living is the key to reducing our costs.
Okay, look, we've got a couple of minutes, like 1 minute 45 seconds. Okay, because we've got to take a song and an ad break up to the news. You've got a busy time ahead. So just say, for instance, I know I don't want to put you under pressure and set you tasks, but what would you like to happen between now and 12 o'clock, but now and the end of the year? Have you set yourself anything, any targets that you want to hit between now and the end of the year, which gives you best part of what says 5 months?
Well, at the moment, you know, in this particular time, my target really is to get some more money. That's what we need to do in order to make it more flexible. So I'm trying to work on that, because that's my biggest headache. My headache is that I need to get some more money into the system in order to make sure that we don't face that £5.5 million
right.
cut. So that has to be my priority, because that will affect everybody. And I'm feeling a little bit more confident, but I'm still asking all the questions. But, you know, in the long run, we want to try and put more face-to-face services in if we can. I mean, we've had a lot of services taken out, but it's easy for me to say, well, put back. Well, just use the LAX as an instance. But it's not an easy task to do.
Will you have a meeting with Bob Seeley in the next little while?
I will be having a meeting at some point with Bob Seeley in the while. I'm just trying to get my head around the learning at the moment that I need. There's no point in me going to Bob Seeley with half a jug full of water. I need to go in there, you know, and say, this is what we need. You know, and Job, he's been around a little while now, hasn't he, Bob Seeley? So he knows what the game is. He knows how to.
So basically, you know, let's not diss Bob. I mean, I'm not dissing Bob. I'm saying, but so he's going to wait for you to come with this jug that's full.
Well, I think he's already engaging with us at different. But the trouble is, we all want to engage with him, don't we? And that's one of the things. I mean, what I don't want from Bob is silly schemes that are never going to be delivered, like, you know, putting a new railway line from, you know, right through to Newport or even Cowes, because, you know, £142 million, sorry, that needs to come into my budget, if you've got that, Bob, so that we can support people to live better, then we can look at other issues.
Can't we have that as well?
I'm not sure that you're going to get that as well.
Well, why not? You've got to aim big, haven't you?
Yeah.
Hey, look, is there anything else you want to say? You've got, like, 30 seconds.
No, just, you know, I'm looking forward to the job. And, you know, but please feel free to contact me. But just bear in mind that, you know, my email has gone through the roof.
I can honestly see that. Hey, look, thanks for taking out the time to come over and see us. We'll probably, you know, invite you back in a couple of months just to see how it's all going. And I know you've got to go and have a meeting again now.
Yep.
And I say good luck, because obviously you've got a massive role there, and there's a lot of people, you know, a lot of people that are struggling mentally and health wise that are dependent on you. And if I was, I wouldn't have any sleep.
No, well, so, I am not sleeping as well as.
Well, you do look a bit wrinkly around the eyes, if you
thank
don't
you.
Mind me saying.
Thank you.
thank you, Carl, and we'll see you again soon. It's